The following presentation was recorded at SEPCON 98, the fourth annual conference of the Separation of School and State Alliance. The Separation Alliance is a grassroots nonprofit organization. Our mission is to inform Americans how education can be improved, especially for the poor, by ending government involvement in kindergarten through 12th grade education.
This evening's session, Why Charter Schools and Tax-Funded Vouchers Are Dreadful Ideas. Our presenter will be Sam Blumenfeld with responders William Dannemeyer and E. Ray Moore. To make the introductions, we have Jesse Preble.
Good evening. Our speaker for tonight is Samuel L. Blumenfeld from Waltham, Massachusetts. Sam Blumenfeld, author of 7 books on education, including Is Public Education Necessary?, graduated from the City College of New York, studied in France for 2 years, then worked for 10 years as an editor in the New York book publishing industry. He edits his own monthly newsletter that monitors trends in American education. Our responders for tonight are William Dannemeyer from Fullerton, California. Elected in 1978, Congressman Dannemeyer served for 7 terms. In 1995, he and David Barton organized Americans for Voluntary School Prayer. And Reverend E. Ray Moore, Jr. from Columbia, South Carolina. E. Ray Moore, Jr. is an Army Reserve Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel and a veteran of the Gulf War, where he was awarded the Bronze Star Medal. Mr. Moore is the director of the Exodus 2000 Project. Let's give him a hand.
Thank you, Jesse. Okay. Sam will start us off with a 20-minute presentation, followed with 5 minutes from each responder. Where you want it?
Okay. Thank you, Duffy. Thank you, Kathy. Very much. A lot has happened in the, as you know, in the field of vouchers in the last few days. The Supreme Court let the Wisconsin court's judgment stand. That is, that the state of Wisconsin, the Supreme Court, they have decided that tax money could be used in a voucher system that would go to religious schools. The New York Times immediately had an editorial on that, vouchers for parochial schools, and they said, it is absurd to argue that public education can be improved by diverting huge amounts of tax revenue into parochial and private schools. A voucher plan such as Milwaukee's does not reform anything. It is a fund mechanism that forces taxpayers to underwrite religious and private education. Improving education for all students, not just the few who manage to get vouchers, requires sustained community commitment and leadership. So there you know what's going to happen in that area. And then the National Council of Churches. This is from U.S. News on the 12th, yesterday. The National Council of Churches is considering a proposal that would reject private school vouchers and throw the group's weight behind public education. Public money should be used only for public schools, says the proposal, which began an arduous review process Wednesday by the nearly 200 delegates at the council's annual convention in Chicago. More discussions are planned Friday, etc. And of course, you know what's going to happen. People for the American Way, the ACLU, and all of those people are going to come down very hard on this idea of tax money being used for parochial schools. So I don't think we'll have very much work to do, you know, basically. And if those of us who oppose vouchers for that very reason, that we don't want to expand government into the private sector. For many years now, conservatives have pinned their hopes on vouchers and tuition tax credits as the means of improving education in America. The theory is that by giving parents, through government subsidies, the financial means of patronizing private schools, the public schools will be forced through competition to improve their academic programs. It is also argued that the government vouchers would give parents the ability to choose a school other than the assigned public school for their children. The major problem with such a plan is that it would inevitably lead to government regulation and control of private education. Proponents of voucher plans argue that stipulations can be put into the law forbidding government regulation of the private schools. But as we all know, courts have ruled quite decisively that acceptance of government money obliges the recipients to accept government regulation. To assume that one can escape the inevitable when all of previous experience has indicated otherwise is to court disaster. For example, when the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that tax dollars through vouchers could be used at religious schools, it left wide open the very strong probability that regulations of some sort would accompany those voucher payments. The court has already ruled that, quote, the participating private schools must select on a random basis the students attending their schools, unquote. Private schools have always enjoyed the freedom to choose the pupils they want to attend their schools. This is one of the keys to their superiority to the public schools. But with vouchers, all of that will change. For the court has decided that in order to get government money, the private schools must become more like the public schools. And this is only the beginning. Llewellyn Rockwell, in an insightful article in Chronicles about the Wisconsin situation, writes, quote, what are the problems with vouchers? First, there is the eligibility criteria for students. The money is not available for the children of middle-class parents who actually pay the taxes that support public schools. It is available only for those the government defines as poor. The very group that already enjoys vast subsidies in the form of free medical care, housing, daycare, food, and cash. Vouchers represent not a shrinkage of this welfare state, but an expansion, the equivalent of food stamps for private school. No matter how you slice it, vouchers represent more welfare, another free lunch for the underclass, unquote. The aim of conservatives should be to get the government out of the education business, not more deeply involved in it. The last thing conservatives should want is a plan that will inevitably expand government's role in education. We already have too much of it, and Republicans haven't helped by increasing the budget of the Federal Department of Education instead of abolishing it. The goal of conservatives should be more educational freedom. And that can only be achieved by reducing government's role in education. It is government's intrusion in education that has led to this perpetual education crisis that requires billions of federal dollars to solve it. But the simple truth is that the more money the government puts into education, the worse it gets. Why? Because the educational malpractice that is now so much a part of the system is very expensive and requires additional billions of dollars every year to sustain it at a level the establishment finds necessary. Here's a statistic that may explain why the education crisis must continue indefinitely. In 1950, colleges of education awarded 61,000 bachelor's degrees and about 20,000 master's degrees. In 1980, colleges awarded 118,000 bachelor's degrees, and 103,000 master's degrees. I shudder to think what the 1990 statistics are or what the year 2000 statistics will be. Who knows how many thousands of doctors of education are now functioning in the system to keep it dysfunctional. That is why educational malpractice is absolutely necessary, to keep all of these doctors and masters of education fully employed. To give you an idea of what these masters and doctors of education have been doing for the last 30 years, here's a little quote from the NEA's forecast for the 70s, the 1970s. published in January 1969 in the NEA Journal. Quote, biochemical and psychological mediation of learning is likely to increase. New drama will play on the educational stage as drugs are introduced experimentally to improve in the learner such qualities as personality, concentration, and memory. Schools are becoming clinics whose purpose is to provide psychosocial treatment for the student. 10 years from now, faculties will include biochemical therapist pharmacists, whose services increase as biochemical therapy and memory improvement chemicals are introduced more widely, unquote. Quite a forecast. Well, here we are 30 years later, and 4 million students are on Ritalin, a powerful mind and mood altering drug. What can we forecast for the year 2010? Proponents of vouchers claim that such subsidies will permit parents to choose the kind of education they want their children to have. But parents already have a choice. They can indeed send their children to private schools if they want to, or they can even homeschool them if they want to. But then the argument is made that it's not financially feasible for most parents to take advantage of the free choices that now exist, and that vouchers would address that problem. To that argument, I say nonsense. Most people in the middle class could easily afford a private school for their children if they really were concerned enough. The trouble is that most parents willingly accept the government schools because they have been educated or brainwashed to believe that sending your child to a government school is tantamount to being a good parent. Also, there are those real estate agents who never hesitate to tout the supposed superb public schools in their community in order to sell houses. I'm sure you've heard that. But the fact that thousands of parents have withdrawn their children from public schools and are now homeschooling them indicates that truly concerned parents do not need a voucher plan to help them make intelligent decisions about the education of their children. Another well-known argument of the proponents of vouchers is that such financial aid from the government would help the poor seek private schools for their children. Certainly, black children in the inner cities have been the prime victims of public education. But what they need are private vouchers from private sources to help them escape the fate of the underclass. Already, private groups, instead of waiting for government vouchers to be approved against the fierce opposition of the NEA, the AFT, and President Clinton and his wife, It Takes a Village, have set up voucher plans that are already helping thousands of youngsters get the best education available in the private sector. One must wonder why it is so difficult for Republican politicians to understand the concept of educational freedom. Perhaps they believe that the public would find it too hard to understand. So they talk about choice in education rather than freedom of education. They prefer to use the language, semantics, and vocabulary of the left to create policies inimical to the concept of educational freedom. The latter poses a challenge to statism. Choice does not. It merely means that parents have a choice of government-sanctioned educational programs and facilities. When we fight for educational freedom, we are struggling to roll back the encroachment of the state in our lives. A government education system is the sine qua non of statism. It is what the government must have if it is to mold our citizens into the compliant servants of the state. Thus, it ought to surprise no one that America's most totalitarian statists are using public education as a means of getting socialized medicine implemented in America. Our public schools are being turned into a human resources development system, better known as outcome-based education, which is very much like the education systems that existed in communist countries. But our system will be much more efficient because it will have a computerized data collection system that will enable the government to maintain the most thorough dossier on every American ever put together by a bureaucracy. The fact that some of our largest corporations are working with the government to restructure our education system and put all of this in place is an ominous sign that we are headed toward a combined fascist socialist system run by a universitarian elite. That is why it is so important for us to maintain what is still free in our society and to do all in our power to prevent any further spread of the government octopus. It is absurd for the education policy of conservatives to be decided by a section of the population that has become addicted to government aid. Vouchers as a supplementary form of welfare might be justified as a means of getting people eventually off welfare. And I doubt that it will do even that. But it isn't the solution for the middle class, which can well afford the costs of private education if they will simply rearrange their family priorities. And when we speak of private education, we are not talking about the expensive prep schools patronized by the rich. We are talking about the many modestly priced private schools that exist all over the country. Catholic and Christian school tuition costs fall far below the cost of public education to the taxpayer. For example, in Boston, while it costs an average of $5,000 per pupil in the public schools, it costs only $1,600 in the parochial elementary schools and $3,500 in the secondary schools. And homeschooling is a lot cheaper. As Lou Rockwell writes, quote, "Vouchers have much in common with socialism. They both rely on government plans, government-issued coupons, vast expense, and invasions of private space. Vouchers reinforce the twin evils of public education, involuntary funding and compulsory attendance. The free market always provides the most choice and parental satisfaction. The free ride at taxpayer expense has not worked in any other area of social and economic policy. We should not expect anything but harm when the same theory is applied to education," unquote. And so if conservatives are serious about lessening the intrusion of government in our lives, there is no better place to work for freedom than in education, in short, to work for the separation of school and state. In the long run, it will save taxpayers billions of dollars and result in better education for all. But most important of all, it will permit us to preserve this precious heritage of freedom to pass on to future generations of Americans. I also want to bring to your attention research that's been made in regard to vouchers. On August 5th, Education Week published an article about this particular research of Paul E. Peterson, who has shown that youngsters who are in these various voucher programs, and that includes private school choice by private vouchers, that these kids do much better than the public schools. So we know that private schools work better than public schools. Sure, we'd like to see as many kids into the private sector from the public sector as possible. But we mustn't do that at the expense of freedom. That's the most important thing. That should be our issue. How to maintain the freedom we still have. Why should we begin to jeopardize that, you know, by the salami tactic, by getting the government into the private sector? That's the worst thing we can do. We must keep the government out. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Bill Dannemeyer, if you want to respond for 5 minutes.
Sam, after that eloquent discussion, I'll put you down as undecided. Earlier this afternoon, I think I shared some of my attitude toward this issue of separation of school and state when I stated that to me it was a good objective for us to pursue, because it's how we educated the next generation for roughly from 1789 to the midpoint of the 19th century. and it worked effectively to produce literate people in America. We're all yearning to once again achieve that goal. And I wish I could stand here this evening and share with you an assessment such as Sam has shared, that we get there improving the educational product of our kids by passing a magic wand or eliminating, separating school and state. Would that it would be so. One of the things I've learned in my years in public life is that whenever you propose an alternative in public policy, you have a responsibility to define how intellectually you seek to get there. And I, to be honest with you, have not figured out how we can establish a system where we would instantaneously separate school and state and yet provide the wherewithal for the education of our kids, of our society. And this is why, in the meantime, until we get to that goal, I support the concept and the implementation of policy of school vouchers. And I'll be honest with you, I will admit that there's a danger to this. I understand the rule of life which says that them who has the gold makes the rules. That's part of life. But I'm taking a page out of some of the folks who advocated affirmative action in this country. And I'll use this as a comparison. When you discuss with them how they reconcile the twisting of the 1965 Civil Rights Act to justify affirmative action or quotas, they will say, we can't do it. Because Hubert Humphrey made very clear in the debates on the floor of the U.S. Senate that the 1965 Civil Rights Act was not to be used as a means of quotas or affirmative action. Yet the courts, acting upon regulations of the bureaucracy, twisted that meaning into it to justify it. But we Californians, you may have heard, passed a state resolution making clear the policy of our state will no longer have it. Some of these leaders who went down this road now admit what we were really after was a generation of affirmative action to help rectify the injustice which we claim existed in our culture for people in the minority status. Whether you accept that argument or not is not the point. I use that as an illustration that vouchers to me are a means whereby we can achieve the goal of separation of school and state, because it's a means whereby in the meantime we can provide an education for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of kids in the central cities of this country who are born into a resident setting, I won't call it a home, where there's no father willing to acknowledge accountability for having sired that youngster. Whether we produce those children or not, they're here. They're Americans. And we have a responsibility to see what we can do to improve their lot in our lives. 2/3 of the black children, 28% of the Hispanics, and 18% of the Anglos fit in this category today. My friends, we can't exist as a free, self-governing society with 1/3 of the children of America without fathers giving them love and discipline. There's no way. And this school voucher plan, to me, is a means, admittedly. It's subject to all kinds of tinkering by bureaucrats and the educational establishment. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised to see the NEA and the CTA in my state of California come out for school vouchers, because they may see that as a means of keeping their control of the whole system. One of my heroes in this country is Polly Williams of Milwaukee, who badgered the legislature in Madison to adopt the voucher program there. And I've learned in public life, watch out for a woman whose goal is set because she's determined, and if she makes up her mind to get it, you might as well get it done. Thanks very much.
I heartily concur with Mr. Blumenfeld and feel that the tuition tax credit and the voucher is a very dangerous thing. If we look at the Milwaukee plan, that he described that briefly for us, it does have a provision where they call it the opt-out provision, where those who schools that take children with the accept the voucher have an opportunity to opt out of religious instruction. And this is basically will restrict religious schools from promulgating their Christian faith. And I think that's one reason why that's a bad plan. One of the items that we're supposed to mention was charter schools, and this was not has not been discussed yet. I see charter schools growing. Many Christian groups and conservative groups are organizing to start a charter school. Now, while they may improve the academic progress of children, and in some cases they're allowed to accept or use a more traditional curriculum, many charter schools also use phonics-based reading instruction as opposed to whole language. They cannot, under the current Supreme Court case law, use them for religious instruction. And I think this is a bad trend, particularly for Christian people, to get involved in charter schools. I know of one in South Carolina where 15 Christian families, very staunch evangelical Christian families, banded together and formed a charter school. It's practically a Christian school, except they can't mention Jesus Christ in the school. So this is a very bad trend, and I think we need to caution people against this. I feel like I understand the attractiveness and the desire for immediate action, and the voucher and the tuition tax credit sort of offers an opportunity to have some quick move towards separation. But I feel that if the charter school movement continues to grow and conservative-minded, traditional-minded religious people accept that, it may cause the move towards separation to be short-circuited. And I would also say that the same for vouchers and tuition tax credits. So I think one way that we need to approach this, and I, being a minister and also working in the Christian community, is to remind religious people that they cannot integrate theology, Bible, religion in their charter school, that it will be religious free, and that this contributes to compartmentalism in faith, and it's not possible to have a full-orbed Christian school with a charter school. And so that needs to be reminded. They need to be reminded of this, and there's more to education than just the academic component, and they need to have the religious component. Also reminding religious people or Christian people of need to have a heavy dose of Christian worldview, the idea that they need to have a total holistic view of Christianity in all areas of their education. So my big concern with the vouchers and the tuition tax credits and the charter schools is it might short-circuit the move toward exodus and toward separation, which I feel is moving along and may be inevitable if we don't do something foolish to short-circuit by pragmatism and policies that might actually hinder it. So I do appreciate the opportunity to be here and, again, generally support what Mr. Blumenfeld said.
Okay. Sam Blumenfeld will now have up to 5 minutes to respond to his responders.
Well, I think everyone here would acknowledge that we are in a war. Cultural war, religious war. It's going to be a long, protracted struggle. Let's not kid ourselves. We're not going to win this war next year, not 10 years from now. John Dewey and his colleagues who got us on this agenda towards socialism realized that it would take about 100 years. They had no doubts that it would take time. And they said they would do it gradually, because they said if they did anything suddenly, there would be a backlash. that the public would respond. So they said, we've got to do it very slowly so that the public isn't even aware of it's happening. You all know of the frog in the water. You put the frog in the boiling water and the frog will jump out. But if you put the frog in cold water and slowly heat it, the frog will be boiled. And so we've reached a point in our country now, it took extraordinary events for thousands of parents to actually leave the public schools and to homeschool. And each one of them represents a revolutionary. The politicians are not leaders. They're followers. They put their fingers up to see which way the public is. You all go to the polls. So thousands of parents have opted for freedom, and they're making sacrifices, but then they're discovering the joys of freedom, the wonders of freedom, the benefits of freedom. And of course, they're bringing up a whole new generation of youngsters who have enjoyed teaching themselves, enjoyed educational freedom, and we have no idea what kind of a difference these young people make as they go out into the world and to begin influencing our society. So I'm basically optimistic, but I'm simply saying we must remain clever enough to resist any attempts to undercut and undermine this freedom movement, which has grown so beautifully in the last 10 years. I remember 10 years ago when I spoke to the first convention of the Massachusetts Homeschoolers Association, there were about 300 people there. Last year, they had to rent the Worcester Convention Center, and they had 3,000 people. So the movement is growing exponentially because not only are they discovering that separation from the state is what they have to do if they want their kids to be well educated, but they're rediscovering what family life is like. So we have a tremendous, something wonderful to sell. And so we must do nothing that undercuts or that in any way compromises this thrust to freedom. And we're fighting every day to maintain our freedoms. I mean, homeschool has been fighting in courts now for years. I was in a court the other day with a homeschool family that were being prosecuted in my town because they would not submit their curriculum to the local superintendent. They refused to do so. And I was on the stand and I told the judge sat there and listened to me for an hour, but judges are political human beings. Judges realize that they're paid by the government. And there's a link between judges and the school systems, you see. So they're going to more than likely rule in favor of the school system, in favor of the system itself. And so we have a tough road to hoe. And there's no question about it that we're going to keep struggling to maintain the freedom that we've gained and to expand it. Now, on the issue of charter schools, some very dear friends of mine in the Boston area, from a very affluent area, decided they wanted to start a charter school, and they wrote up a magnificent plan for a classical school that taught phonics and spelling and memorization, all of that good stuff. And, of course, they were denied. And I asked these people, I said, my God, you live in gorgeous houses. Your house is a $500,000, $1 million home. Why don't you create your school? Why do you have to depend on the government to do it for you? And what they said was, well, starting a school would cost $1 million. And they didn't want to do it. Now, you don't need $1 million to start a small school. We know that. We can do it for much less. But they wanted to start at a high level. You know, our affluent conservatives enjoy that affluence. And they'll make sacrifices up to a point. You know, they'll donate to conservative candidates and that sort of thing. But it's up to us, it's up to the families in America to maintain this freedom, to enjoy this freedom, to expand this freedom, and to serve notice on the establishment, on the government, on the teachers' organizations, that there are more parents than teachers in America.
The NEA hates it.
Yes.
Okay, we've got time for questions and answers. Line up, two lines.
I'm number two.
This is the previous question ones? Okay. New questions to your right. People who have never asked a question on the right-hand side. Are we all? Do we have anybody who's never asked a question? Let me pull this.
You're right here.
Anybody?
You're right here.
Okay. Please try to remember to say your name and where you're from as you start your question.
Okay.
And it helps if you direct it to somebody. So
this has got to be a question, or it can be a comment.
It can be a micro speech, less, you know, 1 minute.
Okay. My name is Paul Gilbert from Colorado Springs, and I'd like to respond on the issue of tax credits. Mr. Blumenfeld said we're in a war, and he said it's a long, protracted war. My response is that I think people who oppose tax credits are afraid to get into the battle. And I think we need to get into the battle. He said that it's a major problem is that it inevitably leads to government controls. Well, of course, they're going to try to take control because of tax credits. But why do you want to concede that you're going to lose just because we've lost in the past? If you're going to lose that, if you can't win that battle, what makes you think you can win the much larger battle of complete separation? He said parents already have a choice. Well, I would submit that no, the alternatives are stifled. Why? Because schools, the private schools operate at such a huge disadvantage that there aren't very many choices out there. That's all the time I have for.
Okay. I know you intended that to be a speech. You want to comment? Your mic there works.
Well, I would say that, you know, one of the great areas of entrepreneurial expansion should be private schools. You know, look at the Sylvan Learning Center. You know, just to take care of kids who can't read. There are all sorts of opportunities if conservatives would take it to start small schools. You don't have to be big. And to provide low tuition fees for these youngsters who need it. And so, we could go the way of tuition tax credits and all of that, but I'm simply saying that you've got to maintain the freedoms you have. I don't want to lose any more freedoms than we have.
Okay, next.
Congressman Dannemeyer, I take a little exception to your statement that we have a responsibility to the children of the fatherless. And it's not because I don't respect them and I don't think that they deserve more than they have, but I have 7 children of my own. And if I take the number of children in the United States and divide it by the number of adults in the United States, I've done my responsibility. I've raised my children, I homeschool them. And so I reject the concept that solely because they exist, I have a responsibility. I'm not saying that I won't help them, but I refuse to submit to the concept that because I'm a member of this democracy or whatever we want to label it as, that I have that responsibility. I will voluntarily do something, but please don't put the gun to my head and tell me that I have to do it.
I don't think that you should interpret what I said to mean that I would support legislation that require you to do something as an individual. But I think as a people, we have a responsibility to these human beings that are in our midst. And that's the sense in which I have made this statement. And I am concerned, you know, I live in an urban area of America in Southern California. And it's a nice place, and then sometimes it's not so nice. But in the immediate vicinity of where I live, there's a horde of people that came into this country illegally. And there's a horde of children that are coming into the school system in my area in Los Angeles County. And they're here. And we have to figure out some way to deal with them. And what I've learned in life is that even though a youngster may not have a father who gives a darn, got a mother. And there are a lot of cases where that mother, even though of modest means, struggles to make ends meet and wants the best for that youngster. Not all, but some. And we have to devise a system, it seems to me, vouchers as a means, whereby that struggling mother who wants the best for their youngster, born in unfortunate circumstances, at least a chance for life, and or a better life, and to get an education, and that's what prompts me to respond the way I did.
I'd like to just say something about the whole issue of responsibility. The other side has millions of public school teachers, hundreds of thousands of doctors of education, hundreds of thousands of researchers, counselors, psychologists, taking care of those children. We have to take care of our own. They're not going to help us. We don't want their help. And they won't let us help the others. Look at the opposition to the voucher plans that they're putting up. So, I mean, it's enough for us to make sure that our children become what we want them to become, to be given every advantage possible, because the other side wants to deprive us of the freedom to do that. So there, the government is spending billions and billions of dollars in public education, even drugging the kids because they think it's helpful. We may see this as a form of child abuse that's rampant in a society that has gone insane. Wouldn't you say that that's an insane aspect of our lives? Now, how do you get out of that? It's each one for himself. Sauf qui peut, as the French say. That's the situation we are. Once we have the means to help others, then of course we should. And I think we're doing that anyway. When I go to homeschool conventions, you see more and more minorities attending these conventions because they realize that we have something that they want and need and can get.
I think the churches can go a long way to meeting some of these needs. One of the main things that I'm promoting in trying to remind them that the facilities are already built, and this is a presupposing that more churches will get into Christian schools as opposed to homeschooling. I'm promoting both homeschooling and Christian schooling. The church buildings are there, unused, many cases 5 days a week. The children are there. We have many public school teachers in our churches who could come over and serve in a new Bible-based Christian school system. We have budgets. There's only one institution, in my judgment, that could compete with the government in this country, and that's the church. It's large. It's got millions and billions of dollars. But there's a lack of vision to do this. We have relied on the government, just like everybody else, to educate our children. And so there needs to be an awakening in that area where you can help your ministers to see this, say, look, we've got the building. We don't need to build a school. We've got the children. We've got many teachers here. We've got the money. But you have to set the pattern and invigorate our people with a vision to do this. So, and Sam has already pointed out, one of the fastest growing areas for private Christian schools is in the African-American community in the inner cities. This is growing faster than in the white community. They have less money than some upper-class or middle-class or white neighborhoods. And yet they're finding a way to do it, in most cases, without the voucher. So there is a revolution underway. We need to encourage it. It's happening. It's not happening maybe fast enough, but the church, I think, can step up and help meet some of this need. I do believe we are our brother's keeper. My first responsibility is to my family, but I do think we need to look out as much as we can for our fellow man. I sort of half agree with what you said, but I think the congressman is right. We've got to do something about this culture because it's going in the tank pretty soon if we don't intervene, and education is one way we can do it.
Okay. Brian Ray, National Home Education Research Institute, and I'd like to corroborate what Sam said. For anybody doubting, something like a voucher is both subtle and unpredictable. And see if I can do this in 40 seconds. In Alaska, there are now tax-funded homeschool programs. Without going into the details, and it's happening all over the country now, within 1.5 years, and I'm a Christian, even non-Christians in Alaska were realizing it was changing their entire focus as parents in the education of their children. Their focus, I've seen this in written testimony, their focus moved to how to spend the money, poring over the catalogs, and their focus went off of educating their children. This is all in less than 1 year. And within 1 year, they were starting to tell the homeschool families they had to test their children, which they did not tell them at the beginning. And then after 1 year, they said, you must test your children. And this is all for a dollar, for a computer, and maybe $1,000 worth of curriculum materials. It is very subtle and insidious.
And that's all. Bob Schaefer from Learn. Congressman Dannemeyer, would you quote those statistics you gave again for the fatherless children?
Sure. About a third of the children born in America today are illegitimate. And the ethnic breakdown, about 18% of the Anglos, 28% of the Hispanics, and about two-thirds of the blacks.
And thank you.
In a place like Washington, D.C., which is, I forgot the total percentage, the percentage of black children born illegitimate is even higher than that. But that's what we're dealing with.
Now, I'd like to make a statement, if I may, and that is that that is very illustrative of the cause of that problem, sir. The basic cause of that problem is the aid to dependent children in which the government attempted to resolve our problem for us. When it first started out, we were running at 2 to 4% illegitimate children, and now because the government has validated it and funded it, we now have those tremendous statistics that you just quoted. The Rural Electrification Agency is still in existence when its job is done. Vouchers will see to it that the government simply gets more and more into education and makes it worse, just like it does every other problem that it solves.
My name is Ari Armstrong from Westminster, Colorado. I have a question for Congressman and Mr. Angel, if he wants to come up, can come in too. My question is this. What I hear the two of you saying is that with Fritz's plan, we're not doing anything, and we need to do something. Well, that's in a sense, that's true. With Fritz's plan, we're not doing anything in a big collective organized sense, where Fritz's plan depends on persuading people, one person, one family at a time, to pull their kids out of political schools. So the question is, are you guys trapping yourselves in the status mentality? We have to do something, which always means do something via the political arena, instead of just allowing a market process to work.
Mr. Dannemeyer, did you want to address that?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. I've set forth some suggestions as to some public policy positions that need to be pursued. Congress made an effort to reform the welfare law of the nation. They nibbled around the edges in the last couple of years about the issue of illegitimacy. But they haven't. We haven't really taken the face the bullet of just cutting it off, which is a tough choice. It's tough, but I don't know. Whatever government subsidizes, you get more of. Whatever taxes, you get less of. Those are lessons that life has taught us.
Okay, I want to start from the premise that... I'm sorry, I'm Drew Thompson from Roswell, Georgia. The premise that separation of school and state means primarily defunding government schooling, eliminating the public financing of education, whether it's in the form of subsidies or direct payment through to the schools, tax funding of education in any way. And ask the question, okay, does that also necessarily need to mean, as a Christian myself, I believe that we have a message of inclusion, evangelistic message that we're commanded by Jesus Christ upon prior to his ascension into heaven. Does that also mean, though, that the schools or the environments that we create cannot be or should not be, or how can we, better question is, how can we create an environment that is inclusive and brings that group into the Christian fold and offers the message that Jesus commanded us to?
Well, if you have a free market system of education, then you've got schools for every possible kind of denomination, You have secular schools, religious schools, atheist schools, humanist schools. In other words, educational freedom means that parents will have the freedom to educate their children as they want. Now, since the government system will be abolished or abandoned, there will be lots of money available to take care of poor children. There could be all sorts of community funds, private community funds. That's one thing I would say that, you know, when people ask me, what about the poor? I always say, if necessary, the local community can create an education funds to take care of children whose parents can't afford to put them in a private school, if necessary. I don't think it'll be necessary. I think there'll be so much private money available that everyone will get an education. As a matter of fact, that's the way it was back in the early days of our country when the philanthropists were the ones who provided education for the poor. And the education that they gave to the poor was just as good as the education that everyone else got. As a matter of fact, the school in Baltimore, which was the school for the poor, it is a classic building. It's a beautiful building. It's one of the monuments of the city. So it is. So in other words, philanthropy did what it was supposed to do. Today, what does philanthropy do? It undermines freedom. That's what the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation and all of, and Carnegie, that's what they do. They're trying to change us into a socialist system. But if we had total educational freedom, there'd be more than enough money to take care of all those kids who needed scholarships.
Again, I have some hopes that the churches will, you know, step into the gap for this. You say, well, they haven't done it up till now, but the movement is growing. Someone said, well, we need something to happen. I mean, 1.5 million children being homeschooled, that's an event. It's all happened in the last 15 years. Private Christian schools are growing. Catholic schools have had a turnaround, and they are on the increase. So a lot is happening in this area, and so I think the funding is there, and the structure is there to do something in the area of the way you've raised it. And then, of course, as far as the churches, we think, take the non-Christian community, they want good education too, and they are willing, in many cases, to send their children to Christian schools but for a good education. So those kinds of choices, will be available.
Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes. Well, let's go on to the next person, so see if we can get through real quick.
Hi, I'm John Geltmeyer. I'm from Colorado Springs. I'm a future homeschooler and a libertarian. This is to Congressman Dannemeyer. You made the example of the Civil Rights Act perverting into affirmative action, and then Proposition 187 being an example of a successful rollback of a government program. I'd call 30 years and a partial rollback in a single state a very qualified success at best. I'd suggest to you that if there were affirmative action vouchers handed out, that would never have even occurred. You would have had a constituency so powerful, you would have never even got the vote on the ballot. If we go the vouchers in the schools, you'll build a constituency of recipients, the private schools, and the controllers will want to get hold of that, and you will never disentrench the vouchers from our system.
Well, I hear you, and what you've said may come about, but one of the great things about this nation is we have 50 states, and because we have those 50 states, we can have a state try one approach and another state try another approach and see how it works. And from that learning experience, we can hopefully avoid pitfalls for those states that have not yet made up their mind what they're going to do. But I think the encouraging thing that I see is what Sam shared with us earlier, is that 3,000 people showed up in Boston to talk of homeschoolers. And I says, next year, how about the home field where the Red Sox play? I understand they seat 35,000. Let's see that happen.
Darla Moat from Colorado Springs. I'm a homeschool mom of four boys. And I'd like to say that I appreciate Mr. Blumenfeld's comments about freedom, because I think we've been enslaved by our government for so long that we don't know how to live free anymore. We're afraid of it. We're afraid of what we do if we turn people loose, much like the South was when the discussion was to do what to do with the slaves. They were afraid of what would do what would happen when you turn people who are used to be taken care of and like children, what happens when you turn those people free? And I think that's a very valid question. But I think freedom isn't something that somebody allows you. It's something that God has given you. And if you want to be a person who is a proponent of school freedom from government, you have to start with yourself. You have to pass that freedom along, that idea of freedom along to your neighbors and to your friends, and you have to help individuals yourself.
I just say amen.
Okay. Last question.
Linda Summers. What I want to know is sometimes we get so complicated, and again, it goes into about controlling, the need to control, where God gives us choice all the time. And if we get this much money every year from taxes for schooling, we have this amount of children here, and I am a responsible parent, why do I have to separate anything? Why can't I have the choice? Because you have the children and the money equally. Why can't I go with that to the school I want and let nature weed itself out and let the pieces fall where they may? So if you use the McDonald theory, you have a lot of public schools that might still be in existence that are very good. And you might have some new chartered schools that are very good. But I hear so much controlling. And, you know, the IRS has books this thick about rules and regulations. And I just say, keep it simple. Give us back our life. Give us back our choice. And I know that there's some people, you know, because they're doing drugs and doing all of this stuff, they need our help. And we are our brother's keeper.
Last comment?
Yeah, the idea that give us back something. The thing is, when this country started, parents had the right to educate their children. It wasn't something that was given to us. We delegated to the government very limited powers. Certainly not over education. Certainly not the federal government. So this is this is really one of these use it or lose it type of situations. If we don't exercise our freedom, it will be taken from us. It's as simple as that. And that's why the homeschool movement to me is so important, because this is a growing body of Americans who are exercising their freedom, and it's very difficult for the other side to claim that they really care if they're going to try to take our freedom away. So we're on the moral high ground. We've got to stay there. We can't compromise that moral high ground. That's what gives us our strength to keep fighting. And that's what gives us our strength to resist all attempts by superintendents and school districts and you name it, to control us. Because as I say, this is a war to maintain, to keep our freedoms, because they want to take them away from us. There's no question about it. And they're being very gingerly about it. But we've seen the signs, and we have to be vigilant. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Thank you. And Dan Meyer, and Lenore. Very hot topic. I'm sure if you've got questions, you can probably corner them afterwards still. Two announcements real quickly. Some of you have heard already, but just once more. Ray Raines had his video was shown this afternoon, and only a few people were able to see it. It will be shown again, and it should be a valuable experience from the reports we've heard. 8:30 tomorrow morning in the Stratton Room, and find someone who can direct you there. And tapes will be available. This is a tape order form outside the rooms here. You can start ordering tapes. Thank you very much.